Good morning. It's Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. And we're joined now by the host of the Oral Sessions podcast, one half of Jack and Pack, a new segment on the NHL Network, co-host of Throwing Down on Sirius XM Fight Nation on Mondays, doing just about everything, cookbooks, all sorts of stuff. Renee Paquette. Renee, good morning.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
Good.
So it just took me about a full minute to list everything you're doing right now. And that's before mentioning that you also just moved and are a new mom. How is everything going? Are you just constantly exhausted or what?
Yes, I'm always exhausted. I never have any idea what's going on. I'm hanging on right now, you know, I'm along for the ride.
Yeah, so you've got, as Blake mentioned, like 100 new roles, and all of them are very, very cool, and so you should be super excited and proud of everything that's going on. How exciting is the new opportunity, and what are you looking forward to the most with the new role?
Oh, you mean with NHL Network?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a blast. So, I mean, first of all, I mean, yes, I've always kind of wanted to dip my toes back into the NHL world. I was able to cover it a lot more, obviously, when I worked for The Score in Toronto, but that was a literal lifetime ago. So it's really cool to be able to dabble in that again. But honestly, even more than that is being able to work with Jackie Redmond. Her and I go way back, but we've never actually been able to work on something together. We've worked for the same place, and now she works for WWE now that I'm not there. It's really interesting. I feel like our careers have always kind of intersected or been, you know, kind of running parallel to each other. So it's really cool now for us to be able to work on this segment together.
100%. And as anybody who knows Jackie knows, high energy player. Okay, so you're feeling it a little bit from all of those roles. You can believe that you can lean on Jackie to give you a little bit of that extra juice on a day like that.
100%. I'm such a person that feeds off of other people's energy, and even though I'm doing it over Zoom, I'm still feeling it. So she's able to fill my cup up if I need a little help.
So you're back with NHL Network, but you also moved recently. I'm curious, you had become a pretty notable Vegas Golden Knights fan. Are you staying Vegas loyal? Are you switching over to Columbus? Where are your loyalties lying right now?
So, yes, I am sticking with my guys, the Golden Knights. You know, I was there from the inception of the team to be able to follow the amazing years that they've been able to have there. So I'm going to have to stick with those guys. Huge fan of what's going on with the Golden Knights. Obviously, not having Fleury over there hurts my heart a little bit. But, I got to stick with the Golden Knights through this.
So that division is a little bit of a jumble right now. And your Golden Knights are not playing the absolute best. And there's a team with a little bit of a wrestling adjacency right behind them. Bruce Boudreau, noted WWE superfan, helping lead the Canucks to a 5-game winning streak. Do you think, I don't know exactly how to word this, but Bruce Boudreau, the biggest Kevin Owens fan there is, lands in Vancouver. Vancouver starts on this big hot streak. Kevin Owens then re-signs with WWE this week. It seems like that pairing, I don't know. I don't know how you do an NHL head coach and professional wrestler tag team, but it seems like those two are feeding off each other in the same way you're saying you and Jackie will.
Yeah, I feel like the universe is really coming together for both Boudreau and for Kevin Owens. Boudreau over with the Canucks and what they've been able to do there, like you said, like on a 5-game winning streak, really pulling it together. Seems like morale's at an all-time high over there with the Canucks, which is fantastic to see. I'm all for the chant as well. I think that we should keep that coming, even though Bruce might not like it. I'm a big fan. And then for Kevin Owens, I mean, what a huge score for WWE to know that he has signed a multi-year deal with them. He just brings so much to the table. He's such an amazing talent. He's so smart in the ring, outside of the ring, his like ring awareness, everything like that. So he's a huge, huge get for WWE to keep him there. I know there's tons of other options out in the wrestling world, so I think that speaks volumes that he wanted to stay there with his career while he's in his prime.
It also means he's staying on Sportsnet channels where you can watch Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown.
Maybe that had something to do with it.
Of course. He's angling for a spot on the Fan Morning Show every once in a while. We've had Edge and Big E on, so maybe KO next. Maybe it requires the Montreal Canadiens.
Have you guys had Sami Zayn on yet? Because you got to get Sami. He's a huge Canadiens fan.
Yeah, not yet. I do wonder if – I'm not sure if he's waiting for the Canadiens to turn things around or if we're just – we're waiting for them to bottom out because, you know, Sami's a big conspiracy guy. Maybe this is an NHL conspiracy against the Montreal Canadiens.
Quite possibly. It could be. I mean, looking at what they did last year and to see them kind of dropping the ball right now, you got to assume something's up. I'm sure he'll get to the bottom of it. I have no doubt.
So a bit of a limited NHL slate last night, a heavy one tonight. But you had last night, there were in the wrestling world, a recent guest of yours, Hangman Adam Page, was on. You got to chat with him, fellow new parent as well. Yeah. What did you think of his performance last night up against Brian Danielson? We teed it up a little bit yesterday, but haven't gotten into it yet today.
I would say arguably, actually, I don't even think it's arguable. I think it was the best match that AEW has been able to put on to this point.
Wow.
Hangman at the stage, him being able to, you know, be at the tippy top of that entire company as the AEW champion. And then what can you say about Bryan Danielson? I mean, the guy just doesn't miss. He's so incredible at what he does. The storytelling, I mean, to see guys go out and put on a match, the length that they did with the intensity that they did, I mean, just rave reviews. I mean, and, you know, we give out those 5-star ratings, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, those guys deserved it. They were unbelievable. They absolutely tore the house down. They're just two of the absolute best. And, you know, as I, like, become more and more familiar with more things with Hangman Adam Page, I mean, obviously I know Brian Danielson so much more from the time that I was able to spend with him in WWE and following his career throughout. But, yeah, watching Hangman just really kind of coming into his own and, you know, doing well by that company with AEW.
So I love segments like this when we can basically just go all over the map with the guest. And yeah, we're able to do this. So now we're going to jump over to one of your other 25 jobs. You are also the co-host of Throwing Down on SiriusXM Fight Nation. You and Misha Tate, one of the GOATs. Julieta Pena was on your show Monday. This is all I'm going to ask you. Yep. Where does that rank for you, or where does that fit for you? You don't have to rank it. We won't put you on the spot like that. But among the most shocking results you've ever seen in any sport, Julieta Pena winning the belt over Amanda Nunes.
I'm honestly still not over it. I cannot believe what we saw. I mean, you know, there's always kind of that conversation of, like, who's going to take out Nunes? Who's going to be the person to do it? Someone has to do it. Unless she was going to be able to retire as a champion. But I think Julieta Pena, I think everybody underestimated what she was going to bring into that octagon. And I actually watched it Sunday morning because I'm a pathetic baby that does have a lot of jobs and I have an actual baby. So I went to bed early. I went to bed after the prelims and I did not look at my phone. I had no spoilers. I had no idea. Watched it Sunday morning and I was like, so I had goosebumps. I was standing on my feet. Like, I could not believe it to see Amanda Nunes in there. And you could see that she was rattled. You could see that she was knocked down and she was hurt. And to see that Julieta was able to go in there and submit her, and not even with a proper submission, like, she beat Amanda Nunes up. She shocked the world. I don't know Julieta personally. I wish that I did. I wish that I was friends with her, because what a absolute badass. I just shocked the world. I mean, as far as, like, where it ranks, I mean, it's got to be in the top three, I think.
Yeah, that's, it was astounding. That's where we had it when we talked about it earlier in the week, too. You know, you kind of put it up there. I mean, odds-wise with Rousey Holm, but that seemed like people were underrating Holly Holm a little bit. And then, you know, there's the Matt Sarah GSP one, maybe. Yeah. So let's check off the final, I think the final one, unless you have more jobs that we haven't mentioned. You wrote a cookbook recently called Messy in the Kitchen, My Guide to Eating Deliciously, Hosting Fabulously, and Sipping Copiously. My mom recently did some Christmas baking and sent some in for the rest of the show here. I'm wondering, within your book, Messy in the Kitchen, is there a favorite holiday recipe that you're firing up over the next couple weeks?
So I would say holiday-wise, one of the ones that I really love is my fancy AF beef tenderloin. That's one that I've done at Christmas time a few times. It's a little bit different in the U.S. as well, because I feel like when I was in Canada, we always did turkey for Thanksgiving and for Christmas. But I feel like it doesn't really work like that here, because Thanksgiving and Christmas are so much closer together in the U.S. So I've had to kind of like change up my game plan. So that's why I've done the beef tenderloin a few times, and it does not fail. It's so easy to do. It honestly only takes about 30 minutes. I mean, aside from like the marinade and all of that. But I like to do that. I also like to do the herb mashed potatoes. That one's a big hit. And I'm also currently trying to like expand my baking horizons. I'm not a big baker, so I'm trying to dabble in that right now. So I'm probably going to work on some Christmas cookies over the weekend, but maybe just like a simple sugar cookie, decorate them a little bit. I've been watching a ton of baking shows, and I would like to become a really great cookie decorator. So that might be my next venture.
So actually yesterday or the day before on the show, we had a whole segment about what would be the last dessert that you would eat in your lifetime. Like, sadly, you know, you're perishing. Ooh. What is it? It's the last one ever. Any dessert.
Okay. So the first thing that pops to my mind is, banoffee pie. I was like, I almost just lost the name of it. Banoffee pie. This is something that we would always have in catering in WWE when we were overseas. It's like a banana toffee creamy pie that is just decadent. That would probably be up there, but also maybe just like a strawberry rhubarb pie. I really love a good pie.
That's JD and I were saying that's our favorite pie as well.
100%. Yeah, like it's, you know, that tartness with the sweetness. I feel like it's very underrated. I love anything that has rhubarb in it. Sign me up. I also am like a huge raspberry fan. God, now I'm like on a tangent listing off a bunch of different foods. But yeah, probably a pie, banoffee pie, or like a strawberry rhubarb.
Now I'm starving. Thank you.
Yeah. We're right about it. We're right about at the point of the show where we all get hungry and Ailish gets a little hangry. So we should pivot off of this. But yeah, I hope those recipes work out and hope you have a great time over the holidays. Really appreciate you making time out of the busy, busy schedule, Oral Sessions podcast, the Jack and Pack segment on NHL Network, Throwing Down on Sirius XM Fight Nation. Renee Paquette, thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Renee Paquette, and if that whet your appetite for a little WWE action,
ooh,
it's time to give away a pair of tickets to the WWE Holiday Tour on December 29th at Coca-Cola Coliseum. Our phone lines are now open. Be the fifth caller right now at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or just dial *590 to win. We'll be giving away tickets every day this week, so stay tuned. And a reminder that Sportsnet Now is Canada's official home for all things WWE. You can live stream Monday Night Raw, Friday Night SmackDown, and pay-per-view events, all streaming today with plans as low as $14.99. Again, December 29th, Coca-Cola Coliseum, the WWE Holiday Tour. Fifth caller right now, *590 or 416-870-0590.
Let's go! Get those tickets.
Does anybody on our team cook or bake?
Yes.
Like,
me,
I don't
all the
cook
time.
Or bake at all.
That's all my,
you bake.
I bake and I cook. Every night I cook.
You bake and I cook.
And I bake.
Yo, your Bulgarian just came out there, so I bake.
I bake
cook,
and I cook, and you don't even know. This weekend when I was up visiting my parents, like, we baked and cooked the whole time. And I just, it's a really nice, like, it's a family thing for sure. My mom instilled that in me. She was like, she was a cooking teacher, and like, she's good. So I was baking up some Bulgarian recipes and some pies. And I know I didn't bring you guys any. I've heard it 55 times since I came back this weekend. But maybe next week. Maybe I'll bake some this weekend for you. Oh, actually, no, I'm away this weekend. So there's no baking coming your way.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you going to take? Going to go to the chalet, ask them where their pots and pans are?
I'm going to bring a crock pot.
Storm? I can't do any of it to the point where I won't even bake. I think I've told you guys this before. I won't even bake the cookies that you put in the sheet.
Outrageous.
That you have to slice it up. I'll just eat the cookie dough. No, there's nothing for me in this regard. You know what the only thing I like making is? Eggs.
I was about to say omelet or eggs because it's so easy.
Yes.
And like, it's good, you know,
so
it's a good
and
thing.
Delicious.
And it's easy and healthy and like, oh, I'll just scramble up some eggs. Like, it's easy.
Even the dumbest, most useless cook like myself can pull off eggs. And yet for me, when I make them, I feel like I'm like Ratatouille.
Try scrambling eggs with a little bit of feta cheese and a little bit of smoked paprika.
Come on. Okay, I've never been a paprika guy, but
smoked paprika, game changer. A little bit of feta cheese and just scramble them up like that, okay?
Yeah,
you
can
thank me
you
later.
You guys went out to breakfast with me the other day. I'm Mediterranean omelet all the way, just about every order, because I need the feta. It's all about the feta.
Paprika's a valuable spice to have in the shelf. Very versatile.
But smoked paprika.
Yeah.
So, Blake,
well, I'm not getting unsmoked paprika.
Well, I thought that most people just had regular generic paprika.
Come on.
Oh, yeah? Blake, you kind of sounded like a cooksman, I don't know, a chefsman.
Well,
like, with that answer of you know what paprika. I couldn't tell you. Is paprika red?
Well, like a burnt red.
Yeah, but I knew that. See, for me and my corner of people who know my degree of cooking, they're like, "Wow, JD, you knew what color paprika was. That's a big win for you." I have spices in my cupboard that I have no idea how long they've even been in there for, because I don't even really know how they got there. You know, they just showed up.
You inherited them from the previous tenant.
That inherited my mom coming to town and cooking for me and going out and just buying spices, I guess, that end up staying in my cupboard. I don't know what they do there. The only thing I ever use is garlic powder, so I wouldn't know anything about anything. But Blake, you were on top of that. You can cook or what? We got a little bit of chef's touch from you.
Yeah, I mean, can and enjoy are two different things. So I think
you have to enjoy it to be good.
Yeah, like I've got like, you know, I've got my standby recipes and I do a fair amount of like batch cooking and stuff, but like it's not something I get in a lot of enjoyment out of. I just like, you master a couple things that can get you through. I do like baking, but the issue is that I no longer have roommates and I can only gain so much weight.
Well, you have two co-hosts that have stomachs.
Yeah, but when I bring in baking, they apparently need a written invitation to try the cookies. So,
no, well,
oh, my mom's mad. My mom was mad at you yesterday.
Why?
For the for saying you about the cookie ingredients before trying the cookies.
Okay, well, it was just a way to get you to give them to me, and it worked, and they were delicious after.
I tried to give them to you.
I'm sorry, Denise and Drumbo. Don't be mad. I'm really sorry.
It's okay. I'm sure she's not sending more. The last of the Christmas baking, I'm not sharing.
She did respond to my Instagram story yesterday, so she didn't seem too upset.
Yeah.
We're back on good terms.
We can do a little bit of who's the bad guy here for you, JD. So in addition to my mom baking you guys eat your own loaf of banana bread and sending in cookies that I brought in to share, there was more to that little baking package. There were shortbread cookies in there. I kept those to myself. Those are mine.
That's kind of, I didn't need to know that, but
yeah.
I appreciate the honesty.
So shortbread is your favorite?
Of the items that my mom sent, shortbread's my favorite.
I really don't like shortbread,
because I have
to be
banana
honest.
Bread in the power rankings like a billion miles up on those
depth
charts. Yeah,
but she sent like four loaves of banana bread. I'm not going to eat four loaves of banana bread. I'm not post-workout JD.
I think shortbread is just like, it's just too bland for me. Like, it's kind of dry. Maybe I haven't had like the best shortbread in the world, but I would pick something. Yeah, well, I guess not. I would pick something up before I pick up shortbread. I would definitely choose an alternative option, but that's okay.
We used to play a game in university where, because my one friend's mom would make a ton of them too, and he would always come back from Christmas break with a ton of shortbread, and it was basically how many pieces you could eat in a minute, and just, it's hard. It's basically the cracker challenge. You remember the soda cracker challenge where you'd have to eat as many soda crackers as you could in a minute? No, you guys don't know these things?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Oh, you're looking at me with like blank stares. So I was like, okay, no, maybe I was the only one. Well, is this a UConn thing?
It used to be how many you could eat, right? In like a minute or something?
Yeah.
It's like your mouth is just like very dry.
Is that what it's like?
Same thing with shortbread. Your mouth makes that noise, in fact. Everyone knows. Oh, did you just eat a soda cracker?
It's like the cinnamon challenge, which was awful. Like, I never did that, but remember people were doing the cinnamon challenge?
Of course. Yikes. Yeah, I did it.
Of course
yeah,
you did.
This is
there's this weird time in the internet before Instagram and Twitter and social media and really YouTube being prominent, but we had those things. Because I feel like Cinnamon Challenge is really old. And the soda cracker thing is really old. They were word of mouth challenges almost.
Literally.
Here's the thing. The most basic Cinnamon Challenge, which is just tasting cinnamon, I would fail. Cinnamon is the worst thing that there is. I can't say. This is the thing. We're talking a lot about baking and cooking right now.
Would it change your mind to know that I had a cat named Cinnamon?
No.
And you love cats?
Reveal of who's the cat guy now?
Well, you had a cat.
Well, my parents had cats, not me. I never had a... Well, I didn't go to the cat store and get a cat. I was like, hey, can we get a dog?
I didn't go to the cat store either. I rescued... a cat.
You guys love that.
Basically from a flaming building.
Yeah.
Mine was in a dumpster and I saved her life.
I swear to God, that is one of the smartest. These are the smartest branding decisions in the history of anything. We the North, number one, turning the lame Raptors into something cool that everyone wanted to buy. Incredible feat. People don't even remember how lame the Raptors were, and then they were cool, We the North. Number two, calling adopted pets rescue animals and being able to say it's a rescue, I rescued it, oh, I'm a rescue ranger, I what a hero I am for rescuing. It's, I think, obviously getting the pet is amazing, adopting a pet is great, but it's adoption. Rescue is such a strong term that people get to say. I feel like it's at least 15% of the reason people do it.
Nah. Ailish and I are basically Chip and Dale. Rescue Rangers,
you know what?
Let's go.
That should have been my hottest take of the day. That people who say rescue animals, it's a reveal of what their true intention was, which was to get an animal to give themselves attention.
Yeah, you want a hot take, JD? Here's my hot take related to this.
Yes.
You don't get to play the I'm a dog guy, you're cat people card when I'm coming off of like 12 dog fosters and you have no dogs and have done nothing for dogs. Other than enjoy them from afar.
Yeah, it's even worse because you couldn't even commit to a dog. You had all these dogs at your disposal. Could have kept them. 12 shots at keeping a dog.
Sorry, I'm rehabbing a dog and getting them to better homes.
Rehabbing? What are you, just like you tell them they can't, you just water in their dishes?
No, like a lot of the fosters like need medical attention or like are like on a certain thing. And that's why like you can't put them up for adoption until they're ready to roll. Mm.
So we are now at the point in time. You've delayed this long enough. Your take, the take that you don't want to say out loud because it makes you feel a little bit bad, but you want to get off your chest.
Yeah, it's nothing crazy. I don't like being negative when things are going well. I think we have, and we meaning this show, but also just like in general, I think the degree to which the Leafs have been a really great defensive team this year has been a little overstated. At 5-on-5, they're basically average in terms of allowing shot volume and allowing chances. They've been a little better than that when you look at zone entries and controlling the rush and stuff like that. And their penalty kill is obviously elite. But when we talk about, hey, the Leafs are, you know, doing a better job of winning these tight, gritty games or they're winning defensively, they're a better defensive team. They're actually allowing more of the defensive metric stuff than they did last year. Where that wasn't necessarily a talking point. And I don't mean this to say I'm negative about the Leafs or I don't think they're very good. I think they're awesome. And you know, even if their defense came down to earth a little bit results wise, they'd be more than fine. But I do think there is an element of a lot of our talk about, hey, the Leafs are this improved defensive team and they have a new identity or they're executing that identity better has a lot to do with what our one big number was yesterday, which was that Jack Campbell has goalied opponents a couple times. And I dive into the stats a little bit and I still think the Leafs are a good defensive team, but I think some of the talk of, oh, they're winning in dramatically different ways has been kind of overstated and they're, you know, they profile fairly similarly to last year still. So that's it. I just don't like pouring water on, you know, a team when they're doing well and stuff. But it's especially been on my radar over these last, say, 5 games or so where the goals against have come up a little bit. And it's like, yeah, I'm not crazy surprised.
Well,
is that fair?
Yeah, it's fair. And I think you're right.
It was more than fair. It was not even therapeutic. You just had numbers and you went, hey, these are, you know, it was like you were like, hey, I don't want to be negative. You couched it. You gave us actual data. My thing was basically like, hey, here's a gut feel. Ailish's was even more gut feel. Yours was very, like, methodical. And I, you know what? I don't think that that's that. I think a lot of us feel the way that you feel, right?
Well, it felt needlessly negative to, like, mention that while they're playing well or, like, you know, obviously, like, they're down a couple defensemen at one point and stuff. But, yeah, I have a little bit of concern. Not even concern necessarily. It's not high on the concern index. I don't think they're that great a defensive. Like, they're not a shutdown team. Mm-hmm. They're not a Carolina type.
I genuinely, when I would say, if I have one of my biggest sports pet peeves is the framework of negative positive, right? Like, I don't want to be negative. This guy's overly positive. How do you feel about sports? Just tell the truth. How do you feel about the sports thing? It's not that important. What do you actually feel?
Well, it's more about picking the spots and, like, sure, when's a good time to talk about this. And it's probably not
every
after.
Time.
I know, but it's just like, hey, we're coming off a 4-1 win or something like that. That's probably not the time to be like, you know, hey, because that's a conversation we have 82 games to have, right? Mm-hmm. So that's all. It's been a back pocket take more than a really hot take.
If you think about it, though, what has been the major discussion underlying all this thing? It's been Justin Hall and Jake Muzzin having regression. It's mm-hmm. been the fact that they haven't really been able to find out a sixth defenseman that they love. It's been Liljegren is good, but not ideal, and that the top pairing is getting a little bit overplayed. So I really don't view it as a negative issue. I think that it is a massive, massive point of concern for a lot of Toronto Maple Leaf fans. I don't even think that what you're saying is even counter to what I would consider to be the consensus right now, which is that the defense isn't good enough. Everybody understands that if we're going to say Jack Campbell has been the MVP of the season, you don't get to be the MVP of the season because you're an irrelevant figure. He's at the top of the pile in terms of most important players because they've been leaning on him. Two things can be true at once. I do believe that the Leafs have better toughness and that they have a more defensively responsible team. Auston Matthews, I think, gets a little overlooked for his defensive prowess. Same with Mitch Marner. Obviously, the David Kampf line, when they go with it full tilt and it ends up being Mikhaev, Kampf, and Kasha, if that does result in a line, then you have three really dependable defensive groups, with the one sort of sneaky, I don't know, part of the mix is the up and down play of Nylander in that regard. But yeah, Kerfoot's on that wing now too. So really defensively responsible forward groups, shaky blue line, goaltender that they've been leaning on.
And so, Morgan Rielly, this like at least this last couple weeks, we've been talking about how he's come to play since he signed his extension. So he's that one thing that I feel comfortable about right now. But I definitely agree with what you're saying, is that there isn't really that comfortability level throughout the entire defensive core without Jack Campbell being that one that's like helping them win the games right now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I tried to get a hot take out of you, and I got a reasonable, measured take.
Oops.
That's Blake.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He couldn't do it. Couldn't do it for the radio. Couldn't give it to us. I know there's one in there that you are like, I want the tell the truth button from what was that movie with Will Smith where he's the concussion doctor, and we saw that commercial over and over and over
concussion?
Again. He was like, was it called Concussion?
I think so.
Oh, I don't know that movie.
Was it really? No way. That movie...
The 2015 film Concussion, starring Will Smith.
Wow.
Concussions were big-time news at that time. Everybody was talking concussions 2015. But yeah, there was a line I'll never forget from that movie trailer where it was just always him going, tell the truth, tell the truth, tell the truth. And that's me right now to Blake. Tell the truth. What's your hot take that you're sitting on? I'm going to get it out of you, Blake. It's going to come out one of these days, your secret. I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it, baby. Should we take a break?
Yeah, speaking of defense, one defense that is continuing to impress the Canadian women's hockey team is my old teammate, Erin Ambrose, who's being centralized right now, trying to make the Olympic roster in Beijing. We go way, way back to our Georgina roots. So we're going to talk to her about the team and the training and what's next. And get a little bit of women's hockey talk after their 2-1 victory last night over the United States in overtime.
Yeah,
so
big assist from big assist, your girl, too.
She's on fire. So that's after the break on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. Happy Thursday, baby Friday. Vibes are good. Last night, we saw Team Canada just annihilate the United States in overtime. It was a great game. Hopefully you guys got a chance to watch. It's the remaining games of the rivalry series between the United States and Canada before the Beijing Olympics. And we're going to be joined here by an old friend of mine. We go way, 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 way back. Probably one of the old, like the longest friendships of my life is as knowing Erin Ambrose here, who's a defenseman on the Canadian women's national team. My old Georgina Blaze teammate way back then. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning, Ailish. I've been waiting so long for this.
Yes, I'm like, you got on the radio with Jeff Merrick before you got on the show with me? Like, what is this?
I don't know, but I've been waiting for this. This is way more important than 32 thoughts or whatever it's called.
Whatever. I'll give you like 3 thoughts. We don't need 32. but I was listening to the segment and Jeff messaged me about how you guys talked about that skills competition that we were in as like toddlers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that was the only time that I feel like I've been successful like in our past. And then look at where you are now. Obviously getting ready for the centralization and playing for the women's Olympic team, hopefully. And it's just been a wild ride to be your teammate and now a supporter of yours. So I just want to just give you a congratulations as a fan now that I know you. It's a very nice thing.
Why, thank you, Ailish. I also want to say congratulations to you because,
oh, you're so
sweet. You're hosting a morning show, so I don't know who gets up at 4 a.m. to do this stuff, but you do, and you're hosting it.
Yeah,
so.
Well, you joined us early enough this morning after a big game last night. So what was it that that clicked for you guys? I mean, obviously the Marie-Philippe Poulin is one thing, but it must be nice to get back in the win column against the United States after being kind of up and down with this rivalry series and playing them so many times.
Yeah, it was huge for us to get that win. I think that for us it was a little bit of a feeling out process in the first period. Mm-hmm. I think we were much happier with our second and then obviously our third. I thought our special teams were great. Although we did give up that goal at the very end of the 5-on-3, I thought our special team did a great job of just getting us momentum. And mm-hmm. I mean, obviously when you have Marie-Philippe Poulin on your team and you go into overtime, you like your chances.
Yeah. Like it's not even a doubt that, you know, she's going to find a way at these points. She's probably the most clutch player that I've ever even encountered in my life. You just feel super confident that she's got that drive and she can be so level-headed. And I don't know if a lot of people listening really know what goes into being centralized for the Olympic team. And I mean, obviously I have a little bit of an insight knowing you guys and having you guys as friends and being through kind of the ups and downs of watching it, but maybe give the listeners a little bit of a day to day of what's been going on for the last couple months and what it means to be centralized before the Olympic roster is selected.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a lot of travel for us. Mm-hmm. I think if you look at our year, we've been all over Canada, all over the US and internationally too. We went to Finland. So, we just try to get in as many games as we can. We were fortunate enough to actually join the U17 Capital Study Challenge early in December, which was a learning experience, but also very good for us to develop. And it's all kind of moving towards our final roster announcement on December 22nd. So just putting ourselves in good position day in and day out. And yeah, that day is coming real quick.
Can that make it a little bit awkward? You guys are spending all this time together, and obviously you need to pull in the right direction as a team. And, you know, this rivalry series is important, not just for its own, but to get you to the Olympics in a good place mentally and as a team. But also some of you are competing with each other for a few of those last couple spots. Is there an element of awkwardness to that, or is everyone able to put that away?
I don't think it's so much awkwardness. I think it's just there's this big underlying, this elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. I think that's the unfortunate part. Like, we all do such a great job, and this is a completely different group than what I was with 4 years ago when I didn't make the team. And our ability to focus on actually making every person comfortable and a part of this team has been really special. And I mean, the unfortunate thing is we have to take a 23 player roster, and I can say that our first rounds of our releases did not, like, it's a tough thing for us. Obviously it's so disappointing for the players to get released, but it is hard on us as well as players to realize what is gone and have to kind of fill those holes because we can't replace people.
And so obviously you touched on it a bit. You've been in a similar situation 4 years ago when you unfortunately weren't selected for the team. And so this time around, you're in that final hunt now, and you're going to find out soon, obviously in about a week or so, about the Beijing roster. How do you keep that composure? I know that there's a little bit of a competitive edge. You know who could be making that final selection. Maybe they're down to one more defensive cut. What is it like having that pressure, and how do you continue to play through that and know that, hey, I'm just here to control what I can do, but yet put the team perspective first? And is there like tips that they give you, like mental toughness, mental strength coaches that give you a little bit of help through these things?
Yeah, I think you touched on it completely, is just kind of do what I can do and control what I control, can control. But also, you also mentioned it, our mental skills coach. Kim comes out with us on the road every time we're with the U.S. And having her here makes it a lot easier to have those conversations with. And I think for me, it's just about putting my time and energy into making sure that everybody else is in a comfortable position and feeling confident so that I stop worrying about what's going on with myself. I feel like I've put in the work and I feel good about things, but at the same time, I want to make sure that I'm not overanalyzing myself. So really trying to help everybody else, however I can, so that we can also get these wins against the U.S.
And so we've been obviously talking about the Olympic rosters, for the NHL for quite a while here, with the idea that at first we were pretty confident that it was going to happen. And now the dialogue is that the NHL players might not choose to go to, the Olympics in Beijing. Yet we haven't really had much insight on what's going on the women's side. Obviously, this is the pinnacle of women's hockey to play at the Olympics. You don't have an NHL to be playing in. You know, you guys have been fighting for this for 3 or 4 years to get back into the Olympics. Where does the conversation stand with the women's side of it? And can you give us some insight on what those conversations are like right now?
There's not too much going on conversation-wise, but I will say, like, obviously our main focus is being safe. We would never be in a position where we're not safe. And we know that Hockey Canada supports us with that. But at the same time, like you said, this is our dream. And we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that we're prepared for that. And if at the end of the day, somebody told us that we weren't going, we would be ready to walk through those doors and make sure that we were. So there's nothing for us to do other than prepare like we are going.
And when we talk about the fear of quarantine, so have they talked a little bit about what might happen if you do test negative? For example, I know this is a long way down the road, but if we were in Beijing and something were to happen and you test positive, is it similarly to what the NHL players might experience, that 3 to 5 week quarantine in a random hotel?
Well, I actually believe that there's been a little bit of misconception on the NHL stuff. There is a 3 to 5 week, but there's also like, once they get the 2 negative tests, they're okay. So we haven't had a full discussion. You said it is a long way down the road, and I think there's a couple of big things to come before then. So we know that there's always a possibility, and we're also trying to just keep safe here in St. Louis at the same time.
And so there's 2 more games left in St. Louis. What is it like? Because you just played in Canada for the rivalry series. It was really awesome to see you guys back on home ice after a while. How was that excitement when you played in front of a full crowd in Kingston? You had the Canadian fans behind you, and now you're in the States playing. Is it completely a polar opposite shift of like, you have home ice advantage and then you're thrust into America and it's like, whoa, this is a completely different situation?
It's very different. I think that the crowds in Kingston in Ottawa were fantastic, and honestly two of the best Canadian crowds I've ever played in front of. And it was very unfortunate that we couldn't get wins there. But it was quite funny. There were not a lot of Canadian fans there last night, but Jocelyn LaRocque actually had, I think, about half her entire family here.
Oh.
So they have just one corner, and after Poo scored the goal, Anne like celebrated towards them. So we always seem to have fans somewhere. It just maybe not as big of a group as we would like.
Well, I mean, I don't even know if they'll have fans in Beijing, if that's what's going to happen. But it's just so exciting to see the conversation about women's hockey starting to grow. And this weekend, there's the PWHPA showcase here in Toronto, which obviously you won't be at, but it's kind of our where we grew up, and it'll be really excited to see a lot of fans. It'll be at Scotiabank Arena, so that is huge progress that the Leafs are going to partner with the PWHPA for that championship game. I know you're not in the PWHPA this year, but how exciting has it been to see a little bit of growth in the league this year and where you guys want to go next for women's hockey?
Honestly, it's been fantastic. And then playing them, we played the PWHPA All-Stars last week, and they were 2 great games. I think that what those athletes are doing right now is more important than what we've done in the first 3 years. And I don't think a lot of people realize that, and I don't think a lot of people recognize that, and it should be recognized for them. And I'm excited that they have the opportunity to play at Scotiabank. Like, I know in talking to some of my friends, like, that first game is a must-win game for them because they want to be at Scotiabank Arena. So I'm excited to walk all along. And I'm not going to say who my money's on because I know you're a betting girl, Alice, but I'll send you a text about it.
Yeah, yeah. We won't put that on air, but if there's underground betting lines, because none of the apps have it, like, let me know. If there's any bookies out there that want to make some money on women's hockey, I'm in. Before I let you go, let's talk about our youth days. So we both grew up in Georgina and Keswick and Sutton. If anyone's listening from the Great White North, you know what we're talking about. Aaron and I played for the Georgina Blaze, I think would be right. Then we played for York Simcoe Express. And so we've gone through it all. I don't know if you have any like fond memories or anything, but like, I just remember playing at the Georgina Ice Palace so vividly. Like that was, I just picture that in that time when we were teammates and how iconic that arena was, and even doing power skating there. Like we were both in the power skating, and like, I just wanted to know if you had any like specific memories of playing hockey in this. We grew up in the same small town, and like what that was like being two girls. And also we had Kate Martini, who's probably listening as well, in our little circle. So it was pretty fun.
It was awesome. And I think one of the biggest, and you mentioned it earlier, was that skills competition.
Mm-hmm.
Like I still remember that so vividly. And I think just the ability, like, from an early age, like, we obviously played together, and then you went to York Simcoe, and then I got there, and then still playing against you, and I think coming full circle and then playing against you in college, like, it's crazy to think that hockey's such a small world, and I don't know, like, I agree, the Ice Palace and watching going and watching the Georgina Ice play.
Yes, the Georgina Ice Junior C. Oh, my God.
On Friday night.
Yes.
Like, what else is there to do in Keswick, Ontario?
Oh, my God. I hope that there's somebody listening that will text in about the Georgina Ice. Like, they might even still be playing. They probably are.
They are. They follow me on Instagram. They're
God.
My biggest following.
Well, what the heck? They don't follow me. I guess I'm not good enough for them. Yeah, I'm going to message them and say, so you follow Aaron Ambrose, but you don't follow me? Come on, guys.
Yeah, yeah. There's a skate day going out. I think it's December 27th, a free public skate in Georgina. Shout out to town of Georgina for Sean Walker and I.
So I want to go to that.
Around in the area. Yeah, I won't be there, but yeah, you can go.
So you'll be back home after that December 22nd date. Is that right?
Correct, yeah, home for the holidays.
Well, we wish you all the best, and I hope that the news on the 22nd is something that we can all celebrate. And you guys are back in action tomorrow, Friday, December 17th,
correct,
against the United States back in St. Louis. Then you have one more game on Monday, December 20th, in St. Paul. And then it's decision day. So we'll be thinking of you. I'll be cheering for you. And all of Georgina, Sutton, Keswick, Paffralaw, Beaverton, areas, they're all rooting for you. So thanks so much for joining us this morning, and say hi to Stace for me.
I will. Thank you guys.
Thanks. Oh, my girl, Erin Ambrose. We go so far back. I bet all of Georgina was listening to that one.
That was really fun. I very much enjoyed listening to it, but I take massive offense to you calling your area the Great White North when I am from the Yukon.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
I am stunned that you would say that in front of me. Like, say that in front of Blake all you want. You are the Great White North compared to Blake. But to me, how dare you, ma'am?
I'm so sorry. I kind of forgot you were there.
Yeah.
You didn't say much. That was all me.
You were locked in.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to interrupt
your
childhood friend ripping it up. Excuse me, I also have a thing.
That was fun.
That's it. You're flowing.
Yeah, I'm really excited for a bunch of my friends that are in this process right now with centralization. And I know she didn't really get into how difficult it is because she's a humble person, but they have been living away from home for like the last year, training. A lot of people have families. They have careers. They have education that they have to put on pause to make this Olympic roster. And I think they start out with just about 30 people, and they dwindle it down to 23. And, you know, there's a chance you're that last cut, and you find out in a week, and it, you know, what happened that last year you trained and you dedicated yourself to the sport, and you might not make the roster, and it's that sacrifice that they have to take. And I think a lot of people don't realize that that's still the women's hockey lifestyle right now, is to make the Olympic team, you give up a year or two of your life to train, and there's still the chance that you don't make it. So just a good thing to put in perspective when we think about how great these athletes are on the world stage and they represent us, and Erin's doing a really wonderful job. And I have a really good feeling that she's going to make it this year. She's been outstanding since the World Championships this summer, and she's a great leader. And I really do hope that she gets that call on the 22nd and we can celebrate. Oh, stay tuned. If I had betting odds, I'd bet on it.
So
we can make them up. We've done that before.
All those towns that you mentioned getting to celebrate, you're rooting for them. I think that's a really important perspective to bring up here, and just a good reminder is like how we mostly see professional athletes and what they're going through in terms of travel and testing and the lifestyles they're living have mostly been unchanged at this point. Now, once athletes have been vaccinated, the rules around stuff, that's why we're even having these discussions about how something is changing for athletes now with outbreaks across different leagues, the ways that they're handling it. But if you are, this gets back to our Damian Warner discussion, right? Of you have to adapt if you're an Olympic athlete right now. If you are a non-professional league athlete raking in millions of dollars as you're just playing your sport, it is taking an immense amount of energy, time, sacrifice to do these things, which already took so much of that. So it is something I hope we keep in perspective when we are watching these games. My guess is, though, the coverage will lean into that extremely hard as we're watching it. So we will get a lot more of that as the games are coming up. Also, just quickly, the Olympics aren't until February. And I know this is always so doom and gloom when it comes to these models and projections and oh no's and oh, here we goes. If there's anything I would say is reacting to these things as though what it's going to be in February is the worst case scenario has yet to really play out. So that's my most optimistic point of view for the day is just how these athletes are preparing. If they're thinking about terrifying things like having to quarantine in Beijing for more time than they thought they would have to, who the hell knows where we are in, you know, a month and a half from now. It's just impossible to project.
No, definitely. And I think there, I cannot imagine the Olympics going on without the women's hockey game because this is all they have. So I think they're going to do the best they can to make it work. And the girls will be as safe as possible and know that they'll have to sacrifice probably even more just to make that happen. And I have a really good feeling that they're going to make it work. So let's be positive.
The rivalry series is 3-2 right now. There are four games left. JD, are two wins for the U.S. enough for you to be like, hey, win the rest of them? Or you still want the U.S. to get a few more W's to keep them overconfident? I know you had been a little split on...
I hope America kicks their ass so bad.
So who's the American now, huh?
America.
I'm still the only America, true Canadian.
Go USA. I'm sorry. It's what I believe. Get to the Olympics, win it there. This just feels... I understand why they do it. I understand why they care about those games and winning them. Every win against the United States matters, but it's Ailish, you said it and you know it. The Olympics for women's hockey is such a pinnacle of the sport. If you're giving me even the slightest belief there's a competitive advantage to losing games and feeling overconfident or getting to play the underdog mentality in a tight matchup, give me the underdog mentality. Give me the over confidence of the Americans. Just win at the Olympics, baby. Let's go.
That's all you need. They're on their way, though.
Yeah, they sure are. Yeah, they did. And, you know, an overtime win, I'll take that because it's, you know, you give them a little bit of false confidence that they can get in there.
There you go. Oh, it was just random. Anything can happen in overtime.
Yeah, no problem.
They get your number.
Okay, so our Wake and Rake parlay tonight, Panthers, Islanders, Canucks, all money line. No Leafs, no Raptors, but Thursday night football, Chiefs at Chargers. We'll be back tomorrow on Friday to see how our Wake and Rake parlay goes. Hope you guys have a wonderful day. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.